More About Co-Housing with Lynn Morstead and Kelly Soika. Co-Housing Houston is a multi-generational, community-minded group of people who share the values of connection and sustainability. We're developing the first co-housing project in Texas, and we're really glad you found us today.
Kelly, how are you?
Hi. Good. I'm great. How are you?
I'm fantastic today. It is the day, the last day of class, and I've been in an 8-week-long writing class. And normally at the end of your class, you always give the teacher a gift, right? Mm-hmm. But today I've asked my teacher to give me a gift. In fact, I invited her to the podcast. So excellent. Today we have as a special guest, a very special teacher that I've had in my memoir class. And every now and then, as you know, you can't bump up against me without talking to me about co-housing. And so Anna Barr, our teacher, discovered that I was doing this weird project called co-housing. And she's like, wait, that sounds kind of like something I did one time. So we had a conversation and I said, stop, before you go further, you're coming on the podcast. So this is where we are. End of class. Podcast, Anna Barr, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you. Hello.
Hi, Anna. So nice to meet you.
So nice to meet you.
Yeah. So Lynn, so what exactly piqued, what did you say that piqued Anna's interest is what I want to know. Like
I think that I don't even know if we remember. There's a lot of talking goes on in this class. It's like you get a group of 12 women together.
And some writing, 11, a lot of talking.
11 of those women are over 65, and Anna, bless her heart, is, you know, multiple decades younger than us. And there's just no stopping us or organizing what's going on sometimes. Is that fair description? Yeah. Anna?
I do my best to keep us on topic, but I like the conversation too.
It's pretty wild in there sometimes. So I think everybody was asking me about, you know, the usual question. What do they always ask me? When are you moving in? Right. And then Anna got curious and then we started talking about it. And then Anna started sharing with me about her co-op experience. And of course, being in Texas, I just assumed, oh, it's another one of these UT Austin co-op stories. We've heard a lot of those. But in fact, it's not. It's a little different. So I thought, let's have a chat on our podcast and hear, you know, because Anna is of a different generation, she's experienced it in a much different time frame than a lot of people that we've talked to in the past. And she also, I think, has some interesting reflections on how this particular alternate living arrangement might be something that is really kind of coming back into its own and should be reconsidered for her generation. So I don't know, Anna, if you want to say how old you are, but
24.
Okay.
I graduated from undergrad at the University of Michigan in 2021.
Okay.
And now I'm getting my MFA at University of Houston, creative writing, which is
so you're just like super fresh into this whole new world that's expanding. And so we're excited to chat with you. So maybe you could just start out, Anna, by telling us just a little bit about, you know, what drew you to thinking about something different than your average college dorm or apartment with a friend. And, you know, and then move on to tell us how that was actually structured.
Yeah. So I think a few things drew me to that. Like I said before, money was a big thing. Ann Arbor gets more and more expensive every year. And it can be kind of limiting in that way, where you can live. But I think what really did it was I was in the residential college at the University of Michigan, which is like a living learning community in East Quad, and it's arts and foreign language based and sort of notoriously hippie. You call your professor by their first name and very focused on building community. And there was sort of a pipeline from that residential community to the co-op system. So I would get invited to the co-op parties on the upperclassmen, and I just really respected their values and the way they were living and like how interested they were in building like real relationships with people. Like the values that they were living through was cool to see. So I think I wanted to be a part of that too.
Mm-hmm. Great. And so how was it? So when we talk about co-op, what was the manifestation of this co-op concept at Ann Arbor? What did it look like?
Okay, so it's very historic. It's been around forever. I don't know exactly the year that the ICC was founded, but I think in the early 60s. So it's the Intercooperative Council of Ann Arbor, and there's 14 houses. It's open to everyone, not just University of Michigan students. So there were people. I lived in Luther House, which is sort of one of the larger houses. It's actually two houses connected. I think there was like 40 residents when I lived there. But not everyone was a university student. So there were graduate students, there were like young professionals, there were people who had been living there for 20 years. It was majority students, but it wasn't only
So
us.
did you have to apply or did they just take anybody?
There's an application system. I think I applied to be in the co-op system, and then I put sort of like a hierarchy of houses, and I reached out to the house president, and I toured a few houses, and I talked a little. There's houses with different sort of like themes. So there were houses that were smaller, like Owen and vegetarian, for example. And each house sort of has its personality. Luther's kind of like the party house. We had a lot of musicians and bands would play many nights of the week, and I liked that. But yeah, it
So
was
how
kind
was it
of
organized? Did you work together, clean the place, cook together? Can you talk about the rhythm of it?
yeah. So in order to be a part of the ICC, you have to do 4 hours of tour hours a week, and you're assigned whatever your chore is. I was on the house officer board, so that was part of my chores. I would go to officer meetings. We would deal with like conflicts. There were times when we would have to sort of like ban people from the house, whatever interpersonal conflict type things, people not doing their chores. And then planning events and stuff like that, electing new members. I don't know if that's a word we used, approving people. And then I also was the food steward. So I ordered all the food for our house once a week, and I had to be there for the delivery and put it all away and get yelled at if I didn't get enough Stouffer's mac and cheese and chocolate milk.
Did you guys all
Important
eat
thing.
meals together then? It sounds like you did.
Yeah.
Like, oh, cool.
We had dinner every weeknight from like at
Wow.
6. So you could come and get a plate, and that was somebody's chore to make dinner.
Wow. And did you rotate or were you just stayed fixed on these teams?
I think it rotated every semester, I want to say. I think there was sort of like an application process. I don't remember. Like I said, I only lived there for one semester, unfortunately, so I don't remember exactly how that worked.
Yeah, you got COVIDed out.
Yeah, well, I actually went to study abroad, so I moved to Buenos Aires, and then I got sort of evacuated as the pandemic started, and then I moved in with a friend in East Lansing. I wasn't even in Ann Arbor at
Yeah.
that point. So, yeah, I wish I could have stayed longer.
Okay, can I back up and ask you though about meals? So this is a question that we get with some frequency. It's like, how often will you have meals? And my experience living in co-housing is it's a couple times a week, and that feels sufficient to me. But I wonder what it would feel like actually to have a community meal every weeknight. How does that feel? Is it like, did you go?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I mean, so there's two things about that. We had I don't think I mentioned this, but there was, in addition to paying for our like rent, we didn't call it that, our dues or whatever. We also paid in for food and dinners, and then we had people who didn't live in the co-op but could pay in for food, so they were allowed to come and eat from our fridge and come to dinner. So that was a cool aspect, is it brought kind of more people in. So if you couldn't live in the house, you could go, or we had former members who would come and eat. So I liked it. I think there was something specifically about being in college too, where it was nice to, if you couldn't afford to pay for the dorm food, which was super expensive, it was a nice option.
Yeah, you
But
could come be
I
part of
a
that.
lot. And I think it worked because we had 40 people. So it wasn't the same person making dinner every night. I think you asked me that. It was like one night a week you would make dinner.
So in co-housing, in my co-housing experience, we would have meal rotations. And so you cooked dinner like once every 12 weeks or like every, or every like some, you know, some much longer. But I almost think like it'd be interesting to think about what does that feel like to have the cadence of once a week, you know, that you're just, you cook the meal once a week and the other nights, you know, the meals are available to you. I think that's
You know, this is, I'm really into this meal thing. I like that you stopped here because it makes me remember when I lived in a house of six, we each one of us took one night a week. So we had meals 6 nights out of the seven. And the seventh day, we then starved because we basically didn't know what to do with ourselves. We were just, but it did, you just got into the rhythm. You didn't even think about it. And you so looked forward to coming home and getting your meal. It was your checking in with the community. It felt like no burden. Well, this is, and I also like this idea of people who don't live there. Thank
Me
you for
too, because
that.
it's like exciting. I think what Anna was saying, you know, that you have kind of more people, and by definition is kind of you have your core group of people, but then you have like the seasoning on top, you know, of all the other people who are kind of coming and going. I love that, Anna. Thank you.
I really appreciate it. And I was busy, you know, so it was nice.
Try to
You
help
guys share
out.
laundry at your in your co-op?
Yes. Yes, we must have. I don't ever remember going to the laundromat. I think we did have a few washing machines in there.
Wasn't a big thing in your life at the time, huh? That was not a big
Huge problem.
thing. We get
Yeah.
that question a lot. Like,
So
are you gonna have laundry?
I'm curious a little bit about the if you remember much, because you were on this kind of administrative board about dealing with conflict, because that's one of the things that we get a lot of questions about, is about conflict and whether you had, if you can remember, any kind of specific process or any ways that you approached that.
Yeah, I don't remember in great detail. I know that we were supported by the ICC as an organization. So I was in house a house officer for Luther House. So we would deal with problems like up to we would, you know, have people come to our basically what happened, people would come to our meeting or we would hold a meeting with the parties involved and just kind of talk about it. And if it was not resolvable there, we would sort of send it up to people who were like
More
people who were on
trained.
staff at
Okay,
that.
they had kind of like an escalation ladder.
Yeah.
But that must have been a really great experience as a younger person to at least kind of dip your toe in that
Yeah.
pool.
And also learning how to do like that conflict is not like there's going to be conflict in a situation where there's 40 people living and working together, like there's going to be conflict and disagreements. And I think that it showed me that it's possible to discuss those things in a healthy and productive way as a community when you have when everyone sort of has the best interest of the community at heart. And I think they did.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. I love that because I don't think a lot of younger people get that experience today. They
Yeah,
just
it definitely
retreat.
felt special. And not everyone gets it. Like a lot of people didn't stay. They would, you know, think it would be fun to live in the co-op and, you know, wasn't for them. But people who were around and were really involved.
So since you worked on the placing of people, is there kind of a co-op type of person? Like, is there somebody who you could kind of like look at them and be like, oh, you're gonna do well? Or somebody where you're like, oh man, this is not for you. You don't know it yet, but it's not for you.
There's definitely a stereotype of the you know, artsy, maybe a little grungy, sort of somebody who's okay with, you know, our house wasn't beautiful. Sometimes I was eating out of a saucepan with like a plastic spoon I'd found somewhere. That was also just kind of our house personality, I think. But yeah, I think you have to be okay. You have to be flexible enough that you're okay with stuff like that. Not having control over how everything's going to go. You might not get what you want for dinner, for example. And you have to be able to make sacrifices to do your chores. You can't just say, no, I'm not doing that today. You know, that requires everyone kind of buying in. So you have to have a balance between those two things. If you want to just pay to live by yourself and run your own house exactly how you want it, then that it wouldn't be for you.
Yeah.
If you want the benefits of community, I think you have to be a little flexible.
So I was listening to this thing the other day in the car, and they were talking about kids who are interested in helping their parents, like that there are cultural kind of differences in the way that kids are raised, and they did like MRIs on kids, and like did they want to help, their parent or their, relative, or did they not, were they being forced to kind of help their blah, blah, blah. So they're kind of like investigating that and looking at the science behind it. And they noticed that in certain cultures that people's reward center, these kids' reward center would light up, that they want to help, that they find value in helping, that there is joy in helping, that is a valued thing, and that it makes feels joyful to them. And I was thinking about that in the context of living in community, that it's not only like, can you do it, but also like, do you find it joyful to be with other people? And do you find it joyful to accommodate other people's, whatever? And so I think it's interesting that you said that like, it's not for everybody. Like, maybe you're just literally not wired this way, person out there, but there are places for you too. It's just not this place. Yeah.
Right. There is a huge pleasure in being, and it would just make me happy. Like someone would open the first thing and be like, "Oh, you got the thing I asked for," and I'd be like, "Yeah, I
Yeah.
got you." It's a nice feeling, like, because I know they have my back too in
Yeah.
some way. Like,
Yeah. Okay, what was the weirdest thing you ever had to order?
oh, I don't remember.
Or you're not telling tales. You're going to be loyal to your
We ate so much junk food, really. I was trying to get us to be more healthy, and people were not. That was my sort of controversial take. I was like, what if we bought more vegetables? And they're like, mac and cheese, fish sticks, it's chili.
They don't want rabbit food. Yeah.
Yeah.
They want, oh my gosh, real American manufactured food. Yeah.
Gordon's food service.
Anna, even though it was a short time in your life, we have noticed talking to people about co-housing that they will often kind of link back like little stepping stones through their lives about how the story of community has changed things for them. And so I was wondering if you have even experiences before this and then experiences after this that we're living in community in that way. Like what brought you to it, and then also what did you take out of it? What's the kind of arc for you?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think I definitely was raised to value community, or I was raised in community. I grew up pretty Baptist in Michigan, and so I was like a church kid. I went to Baptist school until I was 13, and it was everyone's mom knew me. I was at somebody's house after church a different person's house every week, and we all the kids were just kind of like a roving gang, and everybody just watched everybody, and everybody had an eye on somebody and your mom's phone number sort of thing. And I think the neighborhood I grew up in was also like that, very small town, Midwestern. I was an only child too, so it was really, I think, important for me that I grew up around a bunch of other kids.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, it was just kind of baked in from the beginning. I also come from a large, my dad's side of the family is Syrian, and I come from a big extended family with a lot of cousins. And so I think it's just everything about the way I was living that was normal to me,
Yeah.
like living in community. And so then when I got to college, I kind of prayed that, especially I lived not in the dorms for 1 year. I was kind of far from campus, and it was just kind of lonely, and I missed, being able to have a meal with my friends in the dorm whenever I wanted, or going over to somebody's room. And I loved my roommates, but no, we weren't on the same schedule. There was no sort of like communal time. So I think I missed that, and I think that's why I ended up moving into the co-op. But after that, I don't know. I think it just made community a more of a priority in my everyday life. Like being part of the arts, that's also really important. At least for me, and connecting with people and having like deep relationships where you can talk about like and not just surface level things, like and support each other through that. I think this has served me well, at least sort of in the space that I'm in now, that's naturally sort of amorphous, and it's not an every man for himself sort of thing. And I feel comfortable with that.
So how are you building community now at you know, because it being in a master's program is already different than an undergraduate, you know, it's not as tight-knit, right?
Well, I think mine is just because the MFA is really small. So my cohort is like, I think there's six fiction writers and six poets or something. And we're also coworkers. So we all teach, we're sort of thrown into teaching 1301 and 1302. And then we're constantly reading each other's work and going to meetings together and living together and going to conferences together. And so I think again, like it's just the nature of arts school to I got built-in friends.
Nice. So it's kind of like colleagues of yesteryear where people were much more tightly coupled in
guess so.
small.
I don't know. I mean, I've never really worked a corporate job, so I have nothing to compare it to, but when I
One of the pieces that I feel when I'm in an arts community as opposed to not in an arts community is that people are very vulnerable and open and go really deep really quickly and very openly. And as opposed to other parts of my life where people are just a little bit more like, you know, showing up as one very true aspect authentically as themselves, but like one authentic piece of themselves as opposed to arts communities where, you know, for better or for worse, it tends to be like blah, you know, like this is all of me. This is
Certainly.
it. Yeah.
And I've experienced that there's messiness, so there's conflict and there's difficult feelings sometimes. And yeah, I think that if I hadn't had like co-op experience and just experiencing communities like that that are not, there's not a set rule book. It's like we all have to sort of just be here and be a good person and try to, you know, figure this out without a step list, you know?
So, Anna, one thing I'm curious about is how do you speak about community to your cohort, your peer group, who maybe doesn't have the same kind of background or experience in community? Because we're also struggling with how to translate something that we've experienced or we've kind of really feel like we're immersing ourselves into. How do we explain that to people who have a harder time connecting with that? I think that's why Kelly's really great at drawing people out around their storyline, because often we discover by them talking about their story that actually they do have a connection point that they couldn't see, and you can kind of help make that bridge for them. But it's an ongoing struggle because it feels like everything in our culture is moving us away from this. You know, we especially here where we live in this part of the country, which is very kind of independence oriented, self-sufficiency rules the day, you know, be your own person, as opposed to what we've been talking about here, which runs counter to that. How do we tell this story?
I mean, I think that's really hard. I think it's one of the things that at least for me, I could only learn through experiencing it. And I think the second best thing to that is narrative. And maybe this is because I'm a fiction writer. But like just telling stories about or writing about interviewing people, I guess, like you are me. Is probably the second best way behind inviting somebody to have dinner with you and just being in that space and feeling what it feels like. But I think, I guess if I could, how to communicate it to people of my generation, it's hard if you don't have maybe the one thing that people would have in common is like being in like public school, like high school, like in person and seeing your friends every day and you're participating in sports and you're having meals together and you sort of come to rely on each other a little bit in that way. That might be like the one thing that my generation can relate to. And I think of something a lot of people miss. But even my students at UH, the pandemic started when they were, I don't know, freshmen or sophomores in high school, and so even
Yeah.
that's different for them.
It's different, isn't it? And it's like there's this tension where people are actually pulled, this tension between wanting to live in a more controlled environment on your own, like you talked about earlier, versus benefiting from the messiness of community and really diving into those relationships and making it work and all the good and the bad and the ugly of it all, because in the end, it's a greater feeling, you know. It's
Yeah, it takes a risk. It takes a leap, I think. And I think that can be scary, especially for us. We're used to things being controlled and curated and edited and practiced. And I think that sometimes life isn't like that. So
Kelly, we should have one of our, one of the rental units go to like the U of H creative writing program. You know, two roommates come and it'd be like a,
I know, right?
wouldn't that be amazing?
You
Kind of
know,
like a,
early on we did talk about having
we did.
one of our units be reserved before the grand price increase of that was our COVID gift, was a huge construction price increase. But before that, when we were like well within budget, we were like, that would be a great,
You're in
it
our fantasy phase.
would yeah.
Well, Anna, this has just been a great discussion. I really thank you for your insights. Is there any concluding thoughts from you, kind of brushing up against all this?
Oh, I don't know. Nothing more than it makes me happy that you're doing it. And I think it's important. I think it's the kind of thing that's a strength in numbers thing. And so I just appreciate the outreach you're doing, and I hope I can come for dinner sometime.
Definitely,
Yes,
definitely.
we'll put you
And
on the
when we get
calendar.
stuck with ordering, we know who to call who's got less gifts.
Well, we need a fish sticks and mac and cheese at
Yeah.
Well, Anna, thank you so much, and we wish you all the best in your year two. And I'm looking forward to doing class with you starting in June again. So,
Me too. Thank you so much.
bye,
Thanks. Bye-bye.
everybody.
Thanks for stopping by today. We're so glad you clicked on our episode. For more information about our project, Co-Housing Houston, go to www.cohousinghouston.com and subscribe to our newsletter. For general information about co-housing, we like cohousing.org. We're active on social media, so check out what's happening on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under Co-Housing Houston.